You're listening to Special Education Matters, a regular podcast about things that matter in special education. I'm your host, Michael Bohl, and I am the proud father of an 18-year-old boy with autism. Today, I speak with Gina Ramshaw of Building Foundations Consulting. Gina is a certified educator and board-certified behavioral analyst for a district in Southern California. She is beginning her transition from district specialist to an independent specialist, focused on helping families receive the services their children need from their local school district. Gina Ramshaw, thanks so much for joining me on the program today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to see you here. And it's an interesting time, of course. We're talking during all of this COVID stuff, and you are working for a district, probably working from home is my guess. And before we get into kind of what you're doing now, you're as an educator, what got you into education more than a few years ago, perhaps?
I started in college doing in-home ABA programs. I had a sorority sister who had said, hey, I work with this kid and they need somebody to come and help tutor him or work with him. Have you ever worked with a kiddo with autism or anything like that? And I was like, no, but I'll try it. I'm willing to try anything. I had done some tutoring. And so from there, I had started. This little guy, I just thought was the greatest. I found autism fascinating. I found ABA fascinating. And I just progressively moved on. From there, I went to college. I enrolled in a credential program after college and was doing some in-home supervision for an ABA program, and then got hired at a non-public school as a teacher, and just progressively went from there. And just went through, I went through one district working in an ABA program as a preschool teacher and doing ABA supervision. And it's just, I've progressively moved on.
So you've done ABA your entire time in your career. So I thought maybe you started as a classroom teacher and switched over, but it sounds like...
I did start as a teacher. So I moved in to be a teacher. So I did ABA. Most of the classrooms that I've taught in have been, the foundation has been ABA. So I started at my first school district. I was an ABA preschool teacher. And then I also supervised the ABA programs for those students. And then I started teaching. I went to different grade levels. And then I moved on to my other school district and started a program over there for students. It was a specialized program. And the foundations, again, were ABA. And then I moved into becoming a behavior specialist for the school district.
So tell us about that transition. So I think it was about 20 years ago that you got started in all of this. And you know, it was also new that, so my son, I have a son with autism who's 21 years old, and I know all that stuff was kind of new when he was about 3 or 4. Have you seen it change a lot where suddenly it's become more popular? Is the population increased? What have you seen?
I think there's a lot of things. I think that ABA has, I think it's become... Well, first of all, the criteria for autism has changed over the years. So that has changed. It's changed what students qualify for under in Ed Code, which is what we've seen kind of the increase or decrease in things. I definitely see that it wasn't as fine-tuned, or it's not as, it wasn't as fine-tuned back then as it is now. And it's pretty specific. There are a lot of ABA companies out there now. And they have different some of them have different philosophies and kind of like structures and what they're doing and everything. But most of them focus more towards, you know, the early intervention and working with a lot of preschoolers. But now I think that some are branching out into working with and collaborating with school districts, because that's kind of where we need the need, is a lot of our students, they do require these ABA strategies for being supported in the classrooms. And school districts work a little bit differently. They are, they hire their own people, and they're not necessarily trained in ABA strategies and have that kind of foundation. So sometimes districts have to contract out to those people so that they can support some of their students. So it's definitely different. It's definitely changed and grown, I think in a good way.
Okay.
I think in a good way.
So now you ended up picking up your BCBA certification.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, mm-hmm. essentially you've gone from a person who was maybe applying ABA therapies to now analyzing mm-hmm. behaviors in general. Do you still find mm-hmm. you have an ABA lens when you look at everything, or is it, I'm just looking at behaviors nowadays?
I think I have both. I think like, I think I have that lens that it actually has made me become more, it's even focused me even more, like, especially when I'm going into classrooms and I'm looking at students and I'm analyzing their behavior, it's allowed me to really fine tune my craft and look at what it is that's going on with some of our students. Why are they exhibiting these problematic behaviors, and what can we do to help them? And part of that other lens that I have is that classroom teacher component. I understand the inner workings of a classroom, and how can we provide intervention for these students in there? It's very different working with a student in a classroom setting than it is working with a student in the home, because we have different parameters that we have to right. abide by. And I'm lucky enough to have experience in both, to where I can use both lenses. And I think the teacher in me allows me to really formulate intervention and make recommendations mm-hmm. that are appropriate for students and can be implemented, because that's essentially what it is in ABA, is we have to make sure that an intervention can be carried out by the behavior change agents. And that's essentially what we're looking for in classrooms. And if we make something that's too complicated or not feasible in a classroom, nothing's going to change for the student.
Yeah. After working as a classroom teacher, of course, you now have that empathy of what that person is going through, not managing just mm-hmm. that one or two children that maybe you're working mm-hmm. with, but you know, the other 28 or 30 or ever, how many are in there.
And the staff.
Like, yeah, how are teachers doing with all that? Like, when I got into education, none of that was involved there. We talked a little bit about special education, but, you know, I wasn't expected to really be that much of an expert. Have you seen teachers picking that up and being able to move forward lately, over the years, maybe even?
In what way? Like, in understanding, like, that behavior?
Yeah, like you'll find a child and you'll understand their behaviors, and so you'll have a plan mm-hmm. that you talked about. Mm-hmm. And so for a teacher to implement that plan amongst all the other things teachers are doing as well, how are you seeing those success rates?
You know, some teachers, it's easy for them. They can pick it up and they've got it, because some of them will have a background in ABA where they worked in home programs, or they were mm-hmm. an aide in a classroom. And then there's some that are like, well, I went through a credential program and I understand that this is what I'm supposed to do, but they don't wow. have kind of that practical foundation to implement strategies. I used to teach in a credential program, and it's just not part of credential programs where they learn these foundational strategies for implementation. I think that's kind of a thing too that we need to look at.
Okay. And how hard is it as a behavior analyst, like, so a child is exhibiting behaviors. Is it easy for you now to just walk in and go, hey, I know what that is. It's behavior number 6. And here's what we do. Or is it every child is unique and, oh boy, this is always a challenge?
You know, every kid is unique. I was, you know, sometimes there's those kids where you can walk in and you go, all right, I know what's going on. We got to do this and this and this. And I've had a couple of cases like that this year. But then there's those few where they're super complicated and you have to just keep going back and watching them to try and understand. And I've had those cases. And I think part of those cases is, I had a student that for years, everybody assumed that he was just this super difficult child and super aggressive and was targeting people, and he had autism and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm not by any means saying I'm the end all be all and know everything, but I think it was that we needed to take a step back and really look at what it is that he was trying to do and what was he trying to accomplish with these behaviors and what was the function of everything, and just kind of going in and really observing him and analyzing him and working with him. Those are the kind, and then providing an intervention for him to make him successful. And to me, those are the, I mean, that happens, you know, that happens a lot, but then it just depends on the kiddo. You know, I had that happen this year with a kid and he's still doing well. So I'm pretty excited about that.
It's always good to have those success stories. Keeps you motivated,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So now you're working as a behavioral analyst still for your district, but now it's the big change time, right? You're looking to, or you are moving into a consulting practice for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us a little bit about that consulting practice. And then I'll want to ask you about like, well, why would you do that?
Mm-hmm. So I started Building Foundations and behavioral consulting because I felt like that would be the next step in my career as a behavior analyst. I have definitely always wanted to start something on my own. I have, I think that my experience and background is unique in a way. There's not a lot of behavior analysts who also work in schools and understand classrooms and teaching and the IEP process, because I live in the world of IEPs.
Right.
So I came up with Building Foundations because I have always felt that understanding behavior is the foundation of everything that we do in school. Behavior is communication. And if we don't understand why a student is doing what they're doing, then we cannot help them. We have to take the time to understand why it is that they're doing something and provide them the supports to really be successful in school. That's our ultimate goal.
So you're looking to work then, and are you working in a private practice role in a sense for, let's say, a parent like myself that needs help with behaviors, and then you would write up the report and all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would typically do a functional behavioral assessment if that's what's required, and really take a look at the behaviors and then make some recommendations as to what it is that they could do to support their child, either in home or in the school.
Okay. So you're acting as an independent expert then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Building Foundations, how'd you pick up that name?
I just, like I said, I picked up Building Foundations because I felt like that behavior is the foundation and understanding behavior is the foundation of what we do in everything. It is by far, like in schools, in home, if we understand why a student is behaving the way that they are or exhibiting kind of these externalizing behaviors, if we can understand that, we can provide appropriate intervention supports and services for them. So I thought if we build foundation, there we go.
And do you see this as moving to, I don't know, maybe you don't want to say yet, a full-time position where this, that would be your main role?
That's my main goal. Okay. That is my main goal. Definitely.
Any like time frames or timelines that you have?
Timeline. I am willing to put in as much time and effort and work as necessary because I want it to be full time for me. I'm a parent of two boys, and I feel like this would be the next step in me not only helping other parents and other families, but also allowing me to be even more present with my own family as well. So.
Okay.
But they're older and they, you know, kids have different needs at different times. So that's good too. So.
All right. Well, Gina, we're coming towards the end of our time here and I usually like to ask a future oriented question. And so my question, I guess, is when you look at special education itself and how it's changing, do you see it changing for the better over the next 10 years or do you still feel like there's a struggle for parents ahead?
I think there's going to be, just based on what we've all been through with the pandemic, I think there's going to be a struggle ahead for everybody. I think parents, I think especially because there's not a lot of, I think there's been some struggle with educators being in classrooms and this whole Zooming thing, I think has left a lot of people with a bad taste in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we've actually seen the effects of what all this has done right now. I know some kids are back and some kids are not, and some kids are Zooming and some kids are not, but the overall effect of it, I don't think that we have seen. I do know that the referral for special education is going through the roof right now, and that's going to exhaust the system.
Okay.
And therefore there's not going to be enough providers for our students, which is, I think, is really what we're going to see. And then kids are not going to be getting what they need in the schools.
So it's time for parents to be as much or more of an advocate than they ever were.
They're going to need to be. Yeah. And I say that to everybody. I think, you know, one thing that I've learned in all of this is that I have had to become more of an advocate for my own children. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how much I had to be more of an advocate for my children and knowing what they need and understanding what they need and really, communicating with the school, like this is what my boys need. I'm sorry. You know? And I think that that's kind of been the blessing in disguise in all of this. But I think that if anything, if we take anything out of this, it's paying attention is really, we pay attention to our kiddos and understanding what they need, but also not being afraid to advocate for them with the districts and communicating. And districts need to really pay attention to the parents. Parents, you know, we know a lot about our kids. We know our kids better than anybody. I don't know anybody that knows my boys better than I do.
So for better or worse, that, but yeah.
For better or for worse. No, but I definitely think that parents, that we really need to listen to our parents and understand that they know their kids better than anybody and really build that relationship of collaboration with them because they can give us the most information on how to help their kids. That's the most important.
All right. Well, Gina Ramsha, thanks so much for your time today and sharing your views.
Thank you. I'm excited. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Special Education Matters. For more information, including show notes, head to our website, csnlg.com/listen. And if you like what you hear, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. Those reviews bring us lots of happiness. I'm your host, Michael Bull, and we will talk again soon.